Hi, this is the voice, Michael Shavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC on Fox 17 event, which takes place in Orlando, Florida. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down this fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, our bets for UFC Fight Night 80, the Ultimate Fighter 22 finale, and UFC 194 went 4-4 overall to profit 2.2 units. We won our plays on Michael Chiesa, Gene Herrera, Yoel Romero, and new champion Luke Rockhold, while losing some bets on Andreas Stahl, Edson Barboza, Marcio Alexander Jr., and Gunnar Nelson. We went 1-1 with our free bets as well, losing 0.15 units. We won our one-unit play on the Sterling Eduardo under 2.5 rounds total, while we lost our one-unit free bet on Colby Covington. Back to the present, UFC on Fox 17 features a 13-fight card in total and will air on UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 1, and Network Fox this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass is a heavyweight contest between a pair of UFC newcomers in Luis Henrique, who is 8-1, and Francis Ngannou, who is 5-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Henrique, minus 150, the comeback on Ngannou, plus 110. Looking over at fivedimes.eu, our official sponsor right now, it is Henrique minus 125, the comeback on Ngannou, plus 105. Looking across the down best screen, it looks like there's still buck 40s out there, buck 30s for Henrique, so he is a slight favorite coming into this fight. And getting into the matchup here, it is going to be an intriguing contest, no doubt about it, because Henrique really should be fighting at 205, in my opinion. Now, he's had a fight at heavyweight as well, but he's still built more for the light heavyweight division. He is a well-rounded prospect, has some decent skill all around, but at the same time, he tends to get a little sloppy at times, a little bit over-aggressive on the feet, causes some openings. He swings a little wild, so you got to look out for that. Wrestling is not bad. He's actually has a Greco-Roman wrestling background from Brazil. But defensively, he still gets taken down at times, but he is hard to keep down. And against Ngannou, it's going to be tough, though. I think Ngannou is one of these guys that's a very powerful, athletic heavyweight. Now, he's still developing his skill set for sure, but his speed, movement, power standing is definitely something to watch out for. He's got some decent ground skill as well, capable of getting takedowns, capable of finishing the fight by sub, and he's got actually pretty solid takedown defense. Now, question about Ngannou is definitely his conditioning. He's never been outside of two rounds. I mean, he got a two-round decision on his resume as well. So the deeper the fight goes, it should favor Henrique in this spot as well. But I do see a lot of good things about Ngannou in this spot. I mean, he is going to be bigger. He's going to be stronger. I think he's going to be a little bit better on the feet. And I think actually, even in the wrestling department, Henrique should have on paper the advantage, but I don't think he's going to when it comes down to actually in the octagon and these guys are fighting. So I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Ngannou. I think his athleticism will probably get him by, even though Henrique at this point is a more complete MMA fighter. I just don't trust him as much.
Henrique is definitely a bit more of the agile, better conditioned, more well-rounded fighter of the two, but he is giving up so much size here. Ngannou, he trains out of a good gym in France, believe it or not, with the likes of Mikhail LeBeau, Taylor Lapolis, and those guys. So he's definitely getting some quality work in with some UFC-level fighters. And I think that it's only a matter of time until Ngannou becomes potentially just a force in the heavyweight division. But it might be a little early for him here. Ngannou is a terrific athlete, very dangerous, very powerful, very quick. But it seems like to me that the UFC signed him to keep other promotions from getting him, because he's probably another year or two away from being able to go out there and take on the legit UFC level heavyweights. So we'll see. This is going to be a very quick learning curve for him. Now, Henrique, on the other hand, he's a very small heavyweight. I mean, he's only fought at heavyweight once other before in his career. He's primarily a light heavyweight. I wouldn't even be shocked if he pulls an Antonio Carlos Jr. and drops all the way down to the middleweight division. I mean, this is just not a very large man, and he's going to be giving up probably about 35 pounds inside the cage. He's going to be giving up significant height and reach advantage. So I think that the physical presence of Ngannou could just overwhelm Henrique, and it could just take away some of Henrique's advantages. Now, Ngannou has not been out of the second round, so cardio is definitely an issue. And with Henrique being the lighter fighter, if he's able to stay light on his feet, he could potentially win this fight if it drags all the way to the third round. But I think Ngannou gets his paws on him and makes something happen. Now, it's probably not going to be pretty. He still has a ways to go before he becomes a really great level UFC heavyweight. But I think that Ngannou has all the physical tools, at least, to be a very, very good fighter. He's just not quite there yet, but I think he's going to do enough to get the win here. So my pick is Ngannou. Now, dropping down to the welterweight division, we have Haider Hassan, who is 6-2, taking on Vicente Luque, who is 7-5-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Hassan -125, the comeback on Luque -115. Right now, over at Five Dimes, it is Hassan -120, even money on Luque. So again, line margins tightened up a little bit, and that's basically it. There's two-way action coming in, nothing significant on this fight. And I mean, according to their Ultimate Fighter fight, we should see another close competitive fight. I mean, this fight's pretty clear and simple, in my opinion. Hassan is a powerhouse. I mean, what he looks to do is just knock people out. I mean, that's what he's all about. That's what got him through the Ultimate Fighter show and got him into the actual final fight against Usman. Hassan's a beast, and he's going to look to do that against Luque. But the problem here is Luque is a better fighter. I think arguably he won the fight on the show, even though the decision was close and didn't go Luque's way. Luque's a better pure striker. He's going to have a little bit of a reach advantage. Well, actually, not a little. He's got 5 inches of pure reach, I believe, in this matchup here. He's a better submission fighter as well. He's a better ground fighter. There's a lot to like about Luque. The problem in their first fight, he did tend to slow down a little bit, let Hassan back into that fight, and Hassan took advantage and did well. So I'm expecting this to be another competitive fight, but I think Luque knows what to expect now, knows kind of where he made his mistakes in their first matchup. Coming off that loss to Graves, he's going to be motivated as well. So I'm expecting Luque's performance to be a little bit better than we've seen in the past here, and he is the better fighter. So looking at resumes, I mean if you're looking at just straight records, 7-5 for Luque doesn't seem like that's a very good record for him, but at the same time, he's way better than his record indicates. So a lot of good things to like about Luque, and I think it starts here with getting a solid win over a very dangerous Hassan, and we're going to see Luque do a lot of good things in the future as well. So my official pick is going to be Luque to defeat Hassan.
I really thought Luque would look a lot better in his UFC debut against Graves, but he ended up getting out-wrestled, and it really wasn't a very good performance. But again, Haider Hassan is not Graves. He is not nearly the wrestler. He is definitely more of a guy that wants to just stand and bang. He's a brawler, and he does have big power. So if Luque wants to stand and bang with him, just like they did in the first time they scrapped on The Ultimate Fighter, then Luque needs to out-technique him. He needs to keep this at kickboxing range, use that reach, and Hassan wants to brawl. He wants to get inside. He wants to trade in the pocket and just trade power for power, because that's where his biggest advantage is. He can hit hard. He can put people away, and he could put Luque away if he really starts to connect with multiple shots, get some good, clean connections. And that's really Hassan's best method to victory. I mean, Luque, in my opinion, is definitely the more well-rounded guy, but he does have things that are questionable after seeing him perform. The cardio is a bit of an issue, and I can see Hassan just digging deep and making this ugly just by pushing forward and getting inside Luque's range and trying to just connect and force Luque to scrap with him instead of try to out-technique him. And I can see Hassan walking away with another really close decision, or maybe even picking up the knockout. I don't see Luque getting a finish, and I think it's going to be tough for him to win a decision in this fight. So we'll see how he plays out, but I'm slightly leaning Haider Hassan, even though I do think Luque is the better overall fighter. Now, sticking with the welterweight division, we have Leon Edwards, who is 10-2, taking on Kamaru Usman, who is 6-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Usman minus 140, the comeback on Edwards, even money. The public has come in on Usman. He's now minus 210. The comeback on Edwards is plus 175. So on this card, this is one of the biggest movers so far early on. Usman getting a lot of respect. Not surprising. I mean, Usman looked phenomenal. We were just talking about Hassan in the last fight. Usman just ran right through Hassan in his official UFC debut in the finale and won by sub. And I mean, exactly what you expected from Usman to do actually happened in that spot. So Usman's one of these guys that's extremely powerful. He has a well-rounded game. I mean, he's more known for obviously his groundwork. He can take you down, control you. He doesn't have a lot of subs on his record, but obviously he's proven that he can finish the fight by sub as well. So a lot of tough things to deal with when you're facing a guy like Usman, for sure. Edwards, though, man, he's that kind of unique, special talent that you get. You don't see very often as far as a striking skill set goes. He's got decent takedown defense to go along with it, too. And he's got that just special knockout power. So this is not an easy fight. If Edwards can keep this fight upright, he probably comes away with a win here. But the problem is, as the fight goes on, I mean, Edwards does have a tendency to slow. And for these strikers that do have decent takedown defense, it is very challenging at times to maintain upright for three rounds. So it's really going to be Usman's fight to win or lose, because he should be able to control the grappling as it goes. He should be able to at least pinch, push Edwards up against the cage, hold him there, control him, get some takedowns here and there as the fight progresses, even if he can't keep Edwards down. But Usman's top control is pretty good as well. So it's going to be a challenging fight for Edwards and Usman, of course, but I'm leaning a little bit more towards Usman in this spot, only because it's a grappler-striker matchup, and I think it is going to be hard for Edwards to maintain upright throughout a three-round period. Wouldn't be surprised at all, though, if Edwards wins this fight, because he is the better striker. He's got, like I said, outstanding knockout power, and if it plays out, the longer it plays on the feet, for sure, he's got a bigger advantage than Usman on the feet. So I kind of hope it stays up so we see an exciting fight. But then again, I can't argue with the way this matchup should go, and I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Usman here. Not a confident play. Pick whatever you want to say here on Usman, because the public seems like he already won the fight, and I don't necessarily agree with that. I think Edwards is going to show up. He knows what to expect, and he's going to make things a little bit tougher. But I am leaning towards Usman as well.
Who I think wins this bout depends entirely on Kamaru Usman. I mean, he is a tremendous athlete, a terrific wrestler, very aggressive ground fighter, but he also, you know, has confidence in his stand-up. And that confidence could get him in trouble here, because Leon Edwards is a terrific striker. I mean, the guy put away Seth Pazinski in 8 seconds in his second UFC fight. So you know that he's extremely dangerous if given the opportunity. So Usman's going to be playing with fire the longer he stays on the feet, even though he does have a 2-inch reach advantage. He just is not as powerful or technical on the feet as Edwards, even if he is a tremendous athlete. Now, where this fight matters is whether or not Usman drags it to the ground. I mean, Edwards has had issues with grapplers in his UFC defeat, in his UFC debut against Claudio Silva. You know, he got taken down repeatedly by a really good grappler, and he ended up losing a decision that he absolutely should not have lost. And Usman is a much better wrestler than Silva. Now, Usman isn't great at keeping guys down. I mean, he had to take down Haider Hassan 6 times in about 7 minutes before picking up that win in the Ultimate Fighter finale. But if Usman just keeps taking down Leon Edwards, as long as it doesn't tire him out, then he should be in good shape. So I have to lean Usman, even though Leon Edwards is a crazy good striker and could put Usman away if he connects with something really good. But I just think the threat of the takedown is going to limit Edwards on the feet. I think he's going to stifle himself because he doesn't want to risk giving up the takedown. And I think that's going to make it even easier for Usman to push forward and then close the distance and get this fight to the floor. And I think once he gets it to the floor, it's going to be tough for Edwards to get much going, especially the more he gets taken down, I think the worse it'll get. So I'm leaning Usman, but Edwards striking will always be a factor. Now, kicking off the Fox Sports 1 prelims in the featherweight division, we have Cole Miller, who is 21-9, taking on Jim Ehlers, who is 13-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
My opener was a pick 'em exactly, minus 120 each way. Right now, looking over at five dimes, it is actually Ehlers minus 145. The comeback on Miller is plus 125. So a little bit more action coming in Ehlers' way, but again, they are reportedly getting two-way action on this fight as well, and I'm sure we're going to see this line bounce up and down and all around, because it seems like most people out there actually lean a little bit more towards Miller, despite the betting action coming in at Ehlers. So this is a tough fight. Definitely, you have a case where Miller's been in UFC for a long time, has fought some great competition, has proven that he belongs there. He's got a well-rounded game. He's got reach over most of his opponents, especially at 145. He's got skill to back it up too. So he's got technical skill on the feet. He's got a little bit of underrated power. And then, of course, the submission game on the ground is phenomenal as well. So there's a lot of great things to like about Miller. But in my opinion, he's just basically in that gatekeeper status, which not necessarily a bad thing. I know a lot of people when they hear gatekeeper think get offended possibly, especially fighters. But you know what? Being a gatekeeper in the UFC for this long and having that skill set, I think it's actually almost a compliment at this point. So Miller's a very tough out, very respectable fighter, and Ehlers is going to have his hands full. But where I do see some advantages for Ehlers, he's a very solid fighter. Of course, in his UFC debut, he had a very competitive war with Omer. That was a very entertaining fight, to be honest with you. I mean, he showed a lot of good things, a lot of bad things as well, though, in that fight defensively. But overall, that was pretty good. And then, his loss to Skelly, even though there was a knee that was questionable in that fight as well, that basically had a huge impact on that fight. Ehlers, you know, I mean, that's kind of a bad loss. So I think people are counting Ehlers out at this point, even though Skelly is a stud and Skelly is going to continue to win some fights in the UFC with his wrestling, with his grappling game. It's still, I think a lot of people are kind of underestimating Ehlers overall here in this matchup, even though the early action is coming in that way, like I said, from what I gather out there. But I think he does have some advantages in this fight. I think he has the wrestling edge. I think he can take Miller down, keep him on the floor, control him a little bit, land some ground and pound. I know Miller's very dangerous with his guard game, so Ehlers is going to have to be careful not to get caught. But defensively in his grappling ability, I think Ehlers is good enough that he probably avoids getting subbed from Miller. On the feet, I think Ehlers has a little bit more power. I think he can mix things up and trade with Miller as well. Defensively, it is a concern, though. I mentioned that before, and I think that's my biggest hesitation on Ehlers at all, as far as the pick goes, is will he get tagged on the feet? He probably will. His chin is a little bit suspect at times. I mean, he gets wobbled, he gets rocked. So that is something to definitely consider. But overall, I mean, stylistically, Ehlers, I think it's going to be hard for Miller to finish him. And if it is a hard spot to finish your opponent, I think Ehlers is actually the better point fighter in this case because he can get some takedowns. And I think even on the feet, he's going to have a little bit of an edge overall. So I'm actually picking Ehlers to win this fight as well. I think he's going to get back on track here. He's going to prove that he belongs in the UFC. I mean, the guy was a Cage Warriors champ outside of the UFC. He actually faced and beat some pretty credible opponents along the way. Not compared to what Miller's faced throughout his career, for sure. But I think this is a good spot for him to come in, get a win over a very respectable fighter, and then move on with his career and probably do better than most anticipate. So my official pick is Ehlers to defeat Miller.
Cole Miller has been in there with so many talented fighters over his career. Now, maybe that's starting to catch up with him a little bit. I do think that his drop down to the featherweight division has not gone nearly as well as he was hoping it would. I mean, he has picked up a couple decent victories, but for the most part, I mean, he does get outworked a lot. So that is a concern. And Jim Ehlers, he is a good athlete. The one thing is he's giving up a lot of reach. So even though Ehlers is probably the better overall striker compared to Miller, Miller does fight long, and he could make things interesting because he does pack some good power, and Ehlers could definitely get himself in some trouble. I mean, Miller is a tricky fighter to prepare for. I mean, you see a lot of good fighters go in there against him, and if they make one mistake, he can take your back, he can lock in a choke, he's a very dangerous grappler. Now, Ehlers is a good grappler in his own right, so he hasn't really been caught by anything, by any other submission fighters in the UFC or in Europe when he was competing over there. But I do think that Miller is the best grappler that he's faced so far, so that could make things interesting if this fight goes to the ground. And on the feet, Miller probably will have a slight power advantage, although Miller has been outworked on the feet by multiple fighters. I mean, obviously Max Holloway, but I mean, even dating back to when Miller first dropped down to the featherweight division and lost to Steven Seiler. So if Ehlers is just able to stay active and pressure Miller and, you know, get in his face a little bit and really start throwing more volume, I think he can fluster Miller a little bit. So that is something to keep an eye on. But the fact that Ehlers does have a bit of a questionable chin at this point is something you have to keep a track of as well, because, I mean, Chez Skelly does not have that much power on the feet. He's not a very technical striker, and he did have Ehlers in big trouble. You can say what you want about the knee right before the end, but, I mean, Ehlers was in trouble before the knee. So, I mean, Miller could definitely do that too, because I think Miller is just as hard as Skelly, probably more so. And Miller is definitely, there's a big threat of the finish with Miller. I do favor Cole Miller to potentially get that submission or knockout inside the first two rounds or so. So I'm going to side with Cole Miller. Now, moving up to the lightweight division, we have Nick Lentz, who is 27-7-2 with one no contest, taking on Danny Castillo, who is 17-9. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I've been Lentz -130, the comeback, and Castillo -110 right now, looking over five times. It's Lentz -120, even money. Line margins have tightened up a little bit, and there is two-way action coming into this fight as well. Man, this is a head-scratcher. I mean, you got two guys that have been in the UFC for quite a bit. Obviously, Castillo at 155, Lentz more at 145, but he did obviously have a pretty decent run at 155 at one point in his career as well. Now he's moving back up to 155, Lentz is. I think it's actually a good move because, I mean, in that Oliveira fight, and you could see signs of it along the way too, it seems like the weight cut is probably getting a little bit tougher for Lentz. He started fading a little bit in that fight, and I think it has had an impact on his overall performance slightly, even though he did good at 145. So moving back up to 155 probably is a big relief for Lentz. I mean, he's going to be healthier in this fight, and he should perform a little bit better. But Castillo is going to be the bigger, stronger fighter here. Castillo is one of those guys that has performed relatively well throughout his UFC career. He's fought some really good opponents, and he's done, I mean, what he has to do. I mean, he's still relevant. He's still alive in the UFC lightweight division because, I mean, he's good, and he picks up W's a lot. I mean, even against Tony Ferguson, which is on an extreme roll, as we all know, with his recent performance, Castillo arguably beat him by decision, even though it went the other way. So Castillo is right there. He could pick off some of the top fighters in the division. Lentz moving back up here makes it an intriguing battle because both these guys have pretty good wrestling skill. Both these guys are pretty capable of ending fights on the feet. They have good striking skill. They're just well-rounded guys. So I'm not sure how exactly this plays out, who's going to have the true advantage. I think Castillo's strength is going to come into play, but I think Lentz is just a little bit more technical overall as far as skill set goes, including the ground game. So I'm going to lean slightly towards Lentz, but we're going to see an ultra-competitive decision here. I trust Lentz's chin a little bit more, too. I think he's just a little bit more – he's got that toughness about him that you like to see. Not that Castillo is not tough. It's just that his chin has been rocked. He's been knocked out a little bit more often than I like to see. And he is 5 years older in this spot, too, even though in MMA years, I mean, Lentz has definitely been through it as well. So very competitive fight, very intriguing fight. Honestly, it's a very tough fight to call because I could realistically see it playing out either way. I could see Castillo stealing a very competitive decision here, but I am still going to lean Lentz's way because right now I think he is probably getting Castillo at a good time, and it's going to be an ultra-competitive fight, but I'm leaning towards Lentz. I just think he's slightly better at this point.
Yeah, these guys actually have very similar skill sets. I mean, they both come from a wrestling background. They've added some submissions and striking to their game. Castillo definitely does hit harder, and Castillo has actually been extremely competitive with some very good fighters in his UFC career. I mean, you look, he almost put away Michael Johnson when he fought him, ended up dropping him, and then ended up getting finished. He almost put away Edson Barboza, ended up losing a decision that should have been at least a draw. He almost won a decision against Tony Ferguson that you could argue that he should have won that decision against Tony Ferguson, where he was in top position for the majority of the bout. So, I mean, this guy has been in there against three guys that are currently in the top 10 in the UFC lightweight division. So, I mean, this is a guy that definitely has the ability to go out there and be competitive with some of the best in the world. But his deficiencies also, you know, hurt him quite a bit. I mean, his chin definitely is not very good. You saw that in the knockout loss to Paul Felder. You've seen that in multiple other times he's been put away. Castillo's wrestling is good, but I think Nick Lentz's is actually a little bit better. And Nick actually gets that top position. He's a total grinder, and he could put Castillo on his back, similar to what happened when Castillo fought Jacob Volkman. So I think that is a fight that you can look back on and potentially see a method to victory for Lens. I don't really see Lens hurting Castillo on the feet and taking advantage of the chin issues because Lens doesn't really pack a lot of power. I mean, he can be an exciting striker, but he's not a technical striker. He doesn't really sit down on his punches very well. And he really hasn't TKO'd anybody in the UFC other than in his featherweight debut. But now he's moving back up to lightweight. So we'll see how that affects him as well. But I do think this could be a very interesting back and forth battle. I mean, I think this could be a very fun, exciting stand-up exchanges. And on the ground, I do see Nick Lentz getting a little bit better of Danny Castillo. So I'm slightly leaning Lentz, but Castillo is very game, and he has a lot to prove right now, especially coming off of a 3-fight losing streak. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have Josh Saman, who is 12-3, taking on Tamden McCrory, who is 13-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Saman, minus 165, the comeback on McCrory, plus 125. Right now, looking over five dimes, Saman, minus 170, the comeback on McCrory is plus 150. So a little bit more action coming in on Saman. It actually bounced up, I believe, to 200 at one point or not, and then it's coming back down a little bit. So there is, again, two-way action coming in. I understand it. I mean, this is an awesome matchup. Saman has looked outstanding. I mean, his win over Magalhaes was surprisingly, I mean, easier than I thought it would be, honestly. Yeah, I mean, that was an impressive victory because he's faced another guy that likes to take the fight to the floor, likes to grind people out. I mean, he ran through him. So Saman has looked great. He's got that kind of potential because he's got skill everywhere. So he's dangerous on the feet. He's dangerous on the ground, dangerous in his guard, dangerous from top position as well. Saman is just an all-around good fighter. Question marks, though, surrounding his cardio. Question marks surrounding his fight IQ at times as well. That's my problem with him. McCrory, this guy is obviously a UFC vet. I mean, this is his second stint in the UFC. He recently actually got a couple wins in Bellator, which he looked amazing, honestly, at 185. I mean, his first stint in the UFC was at 170. So he obviously took some time off, a few years off, and then he made his return to MMA, and he looked great at 185. And I think this is the right weight class for him because the guy's pretty big. I mean, he's 6'4", not a skinny 185er at all, and he's got skill to go along with it as well. I mean, his two recent wins in Bellator were actually quality wins. I mean, Brendan Ward, Jason Butcher, not bad. Two of Bellator's better guys for sure, especially Ward right now. And he just, you know, he ran through that competition as well. So this is UFC we're talking about. I mean, it's deeper waters for sure that he's going to have to go through here and a harder fight. I mean, Saman is better than both those guys that I was just talking about as far as skill set and as far as danger goes. So McCrory is definitely going to have to be careful, because if any flaws in McCrory's game, it is, again, defensively at times on the ground, he does tend to make some mistakes. But overall, McCrory is a beast. I mean, he's got very powerful skill set. He's technical on the feet. He throws combinations. He's a quality fighter. He's dangerous everywhere the fight takes place. He's capable of finishing the fight on the ground. A lot of the same things I said about Saman a second ago, you can really say for McCrory. So this is another head-scratcher type of fight, honestly. I think a lot of people are banking on Saman. He's looked great, and he's the more popular fighter right now. They're probably going to underestimate McCrory in this spot. I'm not. I actually think this is a pretty good matchup for him. I think the deeper this fight goes, he can actually take over, and he can actually finish this fight as it goes as well. So we could see a competitive decision if it does hit the scorecards. Either guy could finish each other along the way. I'm going to lead with the guy making his return to the UFC and McCrory, because what I've seen from him recently, I mean, he's going to be a handful. And that's no disrespect to Saman, because he's looked great as well. I just think this matchup favors McCrory just slightly in this spot. So I'm going to go with the underdog against the grain here and pick McCrory to make his return to the UFC a very successful one.
Josh Saman has looked better and better every time we've seen him inside the octagon. And Tamden McCrory, I mean, people wrote him off after his UFC release. He was out of mixed martial arts for 4 or 5 years and then just came back with a vengeance. And he's still only just 29 years old, believe it or not. So there's still plenty of fight left in this guy. And he showed it in Bellator. I mean, he absolutely steamrolled both Brendan Ward and Jason Butcher in his two Bellator fights. I think they were less than 90 seconds combined. And I believe he was offered a title shot and turned it down because he wanted to fight in the UFC when his contract expired. So this is definitely a guy that is crazy motivated to go out there and compete with the best in the world. McCrory is an extremely dangerous striker. The guy works fluid combinations with power. He's high volume, active guy on the feet and on the ground. If he can get to top position, he can punish you. And he does have a decent submission game as well. So Saman is going to have to be on his guard at all times. I mean, McCrory is a very dangerous, very scary guy, especially for somebody that people, you know, haven't really seen much of lately. Now, Saman, he's very well-rounded. I think his best position in the entire fight, especially in this one, would be to push McCrory into the fence and then just start working him over with knees, both the up high and to the body and legs. Saman can really, really punish his opponent in the clinch. That's definitely his best position, but he's also extremely dangerous if he can get in top position on the ground. I mean, he has this kind of double-fisted ground and pound that he can really hurt his opponents with. He can work submissions that you saw most recently. And then, of course, on the feet, he does have a lot of power still. I mean, obviously, he's not the most technical striker, and I think that that could get him in trouble. But, I mean, you can't forget his head kick knockout of Eddie Gordan either. So this is definitely a guy that is a well-rounded, dangerous fighter, and you're just kind of seeing a big collision here of two extremely dangerous middleweights. So I'm slightly leaning Saman just because I can see him getting this fight to the clinch, getting this fight to the ground, but McCrory is going to be violent and scary at all times. So I'm really excited for this fight, and I'm slightly leaning Saman, but do not sleep on Tamden McCrory either. Now, dropping down to the women's bantamweight division, we have Sarah Kaufman, who is 17-3 with one no contest, taking on Valentina Shevchenko, who is 11-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Kaufman -230, the comeback on Shevchenko +170. Right now, looking over five dimes, it's -240 for Kaufman, +200 for Shevchenko. So basically, again, line margins tightened up a little bit. There is more parlay action coming in on Kaufman. Kaufman, in my opinion, has been one of the best bantamweight women fighters in the sport for a long time. I mean, quality fighter. She excels in the stand-up game, has really good boxing, smart fighter, actually underrated wrestling to go along with it. Good top game, good ground and pound, just everything about her. Fight IQ, you got to really like Kaufman in this spot. She's been, again, one of the top two, three ladies in the division, in my opinion, for a long time. Hard out. There is a little bit of a sign of a decline, though, I think. I mean, coming in Kaufman's way. And it's crazy to say because she's only 30 years old. But again, she's been in a lot of wars throughout her MMA career as well. Fought quality competition. And in my opinion, if you're looking at her most recent fights, she has not looked as great, especially later on in the fight. She's facing a very dangerous opponent here in Shevchenko. I mean, Shevchenko is a Muay Thai stylist. She's very dangerous on the feet. I mean, her resume from kickboxing speaks for itself, really. Now, her MMA resume at the same time does not. I mean, it's really padded. Really, her best win is over Jan Finney, which Finney's actually a pretty underrated fighter in her own right, but that tells you that she hasn't really faced nowhere near the competition level that Kaufman's faced. So Shevchenko is stepping up and facing her biggest challenge to date for sure. Very tough challenge, but the problem here is, or the good thing for Shevchenko is that she matches up extremely well with Kaufman because she's facing another striker that might look for a takedown or two. But in Shevchenko's game, I mean, from what I have seen thus far, again, against lower level competition, her takedown defense is actually pretty good. She has a great clinch game. She's not easy to hold down on the floor either. She actually has some decent jujitsu to go along with it. I mean, she's not bad. She attacks off her back. She scrambles to her feet well. And then again, her clinch game is outstanding. She's very dangerous from the clinch offensively. In space, she's going to have an advantage over Kaufman. She's going to have a little bit of speed, her technical skill set, her spinning attacks, her power to go along with it. Shevchenko is a very legit threat in this spot. So that's why it makes it a little bit tough, honestly. I mean, Kaufman, I think, is going to have to look for some takedowns here to try to control Shevchenko. I don't think it's going to be easy to do that. Shevchenko is taking this fight on short notice, so if any concerns for me here in this spot would be maybe she tends to gas a little bit as the fight goes. Kaufman could take advantage of that and maybe steal a couple rounds. But overall, Shevchenko is a serious talent and a good addition. I'm glad she's coming in here, stepping in, even on short notice. She deserves a shot in the UFC. Because even though, again, her resume might not be that impressive, I think she's going to perform well in the UFC and she's going to win a lot of fights. I'm going to actually pick her against Kaufman as well because I do think it's a striker versus striker matchup. And Shevchenko is just basically your better striker in this spot. And from what I've seen from Kaufman, she is a little bit more hittable. She hasn't looked as good, like I said, in my opinion, as she has earlier in her career. So I think Shevchenko might be getting her at a good time here. And I think, I mean, the striking probably will show in this spot. And she's just a step ahead of Kaufman overall. So I'm going to lean with the dog here. Shevchenko is going to be my pick over Kaufman.
While Shevchenko hasn't faced the best opposition so far in her mixed martial arts career, I think she definitely has the skills and talent to be competitive with just about anybody in the women's 135-pound division in the UFC. She is an excellent kicker. I mean, if you go and look her upper record, they say that she's had 500 fights in terms of amateur and whatever kickboxing and boxing combined. So, I mean, she's clearly experienced, even if that's even only half true. But, and Sarah Kaufman, while she's been in there and done that with just about every great UFC women's bantamweight, I do think that, as Nick mentioned, she is in a bit of a decline. She is starting to slow down. She's never been the fastest fighter in the 135-pound division, but she always made up for it with just being extremely physically strong, having a lot of power in her hands, and just being able to just outwork her opponents. And I don't see her being able to do that as much anymore. I mean, you saw she's made some silly decisions in fights where, like against Alexis Davis, where she was working things properly and then just goes for a takedown and gets armbarred. I mean, just silly, silly mistakes that you cannot afford to make. Now, I think takedowns would probably be beneficial to her in this fight because Shevchenko is going to have a huge speed advantage on her. And I think Shevchenko is potentially going to be able to light her up on the feet if she's able to get distance, especially with the way that Kaufman fights. Now, Shevchenko in her last fight against Jan Finney, she was more of a one-and-done type striker, but I think that was more because she wanted to just keep scoring points because Finney wasn't doing anything on the feet. Shevchenko does a lot better when she fights and her opponent is actually trying to hit her because she's definitely more of a counter striker. And Shevchenko is a southpaw that could make things interesting. And really, what surprised me the most about Shevchenko was in that last fight, Jan Finney was repeatedly trying to get takedowns and Shevchenko reversed it every time, landed in top position. Not one time did she get taken down. So I do still think that Kaufman will work for takedowns, and she can probably get one a few. But I think if Shevchenko can keep her distance, I mean, this could be a very similar fight to the Jessica Eye fight. But I can see Shevchenko doing a lot more damage because Shevchenko hits harder, her kicks are better, she has good boxing, good combinations, and I think that this fight is going to be extremely, extremely competitive. And potentially, Shevchenko could just run away with it if Kaufman is not able to close the distance. Now, Kaufman does have more pure punching power than Shevchenko, so if she can get in that phone booth and start unloading, then maybe she could get something going. But I can see Shevchenko just landing all kinds of crazy kicks. I mean, she has an extremely diverse skill set with her striking. I mean, she can land question mark kicks, hook kicks, spinning kicks, you name it. Very, very impressive kicking game. And she is a very composed striker, and she's training out of a good gym with Tiger Muay Thai, where a lot of really good Dagestani fighters are training right now. So I can see her getting a lot of great training, and I see her being fully prepared for this, even though Sarah Kaufman is one of the best women's bantamweights ever. I think Shevchenko has the skills to potentially beat her and, you know, really just explode onto the map here. So I'm going to pick her as well. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have CB Dolloway, who is 16-8, taking on Nate Marquardt, who is 36-15-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Dolloway, -350 to come back on Marquardt, +250 right now, looking for five dimes. It's Dolloway, -360 to come back on Marquardt, is 300. So line margin is tightening up a little bit more. Parlay action coming in Dolloway's way. Nothing significant, though, at this spot. It is a tough fight because, I mean, skill set for skill set, Marquardt is the better fighter. There's no doubt about it. He has been throughout his career just a well-rounded, talented fighter. I mean, world-class. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you got to respect Marquardt, what he's accomplished throughout his career. But the problem is the decline factor is definitely there. I mean, it was kind of sad to see him against Gaslam in that last fight. When you see a guy with that much talent get to that spot where, I mean, you could tell he wants to be out of there, it is kind of sad. So that's the reason right here in this fight for me. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. Dalloway has looked good. He's looked better. Stylistically, he's a tough matchup for Marquardt because Marquardt's not going to be able to get the takedowns on Dalloway. He's not going to be able to out-wrestle him there. On the feet, Dalloway's going to be a little bit longer. I think he's obviously has displayed improved striking skill. Dalloway's just a pretty complete fighter in his own right, but defensively, he is flawed a little bit. Dalloway's chin is always going to be suspect. Marquardt has enough power. You never know. So that's a scary thing. It's Dalloway's fight to win or lose here. I think Dalloway probably can finish Marquardt. If not, I think he cruises to a pretty one-sided or clear decision in this fight as well. I don't expect Marquardt, though, to survive, to be honest with you, to make three rounds. I think this probably will be his last fight. But again, I mean, the caution here is Dalloway does have a suspect chin. Dalloway also on the ground, even though he should be in top position if it hits the ground, he does some silly things and gets himself in situations that you don't want to see. So as a 3.5-1 favorite, can you trust Dalloway completely? No, you can't. Not even in this spot against a declining Marquardt. So you got to be careful here. It all depends on the price for Dalloway for sure as far as betting goes. But he should win this fight. It is his fight to win or lose, so I am going to pick him to win.
Yeah, it's really terrifying that Nate Marquardt's fighting again, especially considering, I mean, in his last fight against Gastelum, he literally told his corner he had nothing left, and they stopped the fight. And I figured that he had nothing left in his career and he was just going to retire right then and there. And here he is back again and he's facing another ranked middleweight. So very scary. And I think that Nate Marquardt could be getting himself in some serious trouble. I mean, he has not looked good whatsoever in his UFC return ever since he won that Strikeforce welterweight title. He had a rough run at welterweight. He moved back up to middleweight, had one nice performance against James Tahuna, and then since then has just been falling back on his face a little bit, and he just cannot pull the trigger anymore. It's very frustrating watching him fight. He just looks like a fighter that does not have any confidence anymore. So, I was shocked that he's competing again, and I think that CB Dalloway, even though he's had a couple tough performances. I mean, you look at the guys that beat him recently, and it was Michael Bisping and Lyoto Machida. I mean, Machida, you can't blame anybody for losing to Machida. And then Bisping, I mean, that was competitive. I mean, he almost put away Bisping early, and then Bisping, did his thing and rallied and came back and won. So I think this is a very winnable fight for Dalloway. I think Dalloway can knock him out on the feet. I think Dalloway can put him away with ground and pound. I think Dalloway could submit him on the ground. He just has to not be reckless. He has to be mindful of his defense. And I do think his defense has gotten better. So I think it's going to be tougher for Marquardt to land that kill shot on the feet. And it's going to be tough for Marquardt to land that submission on the ground as well. So I see CB Dalloway just controlling this fight. I think he can win it any way he wants. And I think that he does end Nate Marquardt's UFC career here. So my pick is going to be CB Dalloway. Now dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Charles Oliveira, who is 20-5 with one no contest, taking on Miles Jury, who is 15-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Interesting fight. I opened Jury -170, the comeback on Oliveira +130. Right now, most of the action coming in Oliveira's way. It's down to -130 for Jury. The comeback on Oliveira is +110. So more faith in Oliveira's game, and I've always been a big fan of Oliveira, definitely. I mean, the guy is a skilled fighter, underrated fighter, in my opinion. Now he's finally starting to get some respect for sure, minus his last performance against Holloway and some performances that are similar to the Holloway fight along his career as well. I mean, the Swanson fight, the Cerrone fight. Oliveira's had some spots, had some bad losses. That's a problem. He's had some pretty good wins. He's looked great. You could tell that the guy is just a stud in the sport period, but at the same time, those losses kind of bother you, and they bother me at least. I don't like to see quit in a fighter, and Oliveira definitely shows some of that. So that bothers me in this spot, of course, as I just mentioned, but his fight with Jury is going to be intriguing because Jury is dropping down to 145 for the first time. We're going to have to really see how he looks at weigh-ins and how he performs here. I think it's a good move. If Jury can make the weight cut properly and it doesn't really affect him that bad, this is a good division for Jury. He's going to be long. He's definitely skilled. He's more talented in a lot of ways in this spot here. I think Jury is a better striker. He's going to be effective with his striking game. He's got good counter punches. He's got some power on the feet as well. I think Jury is actually the more talented wrestler of the two as well here. And then the submission game, obviously you got to give an edge offensively to Oliveira because he could submit anybody in the UFC. If you make one mistake, Oliveira can sub you. It's that kind of fighter that he is. He's not going to sub everybody, but he's capable of doing so. Jury does have an outstanding submission game in his own right. Is it on Oliveira's level? I don't think. Defensively though, Jury's okay. So it's really going to come down to, in my opinion, I'll keep it pretty plain and simple. On the scorecards, I think Jury wins. As far as the finish goes, I think Jury has the potential to make Oliveira quit, possibly knock him out on the feet. And then, of course, the only way Oliveira, I do see him winning, is actually catching Jury along the way in sub. Now, he can be competitive on the scorecards. I understand that as well. But I don't see him winning a decision here, honestly. So I think it is Jury's fight to win or lose. I think Jury probably does not get caught in a submission here. So we either see a finish from Jury or we see him win on the scorecard. So in my opinion, if he looks good at the weigh-ins and he's able to compete well at 145, he should win this fight. So I'm going to go with Miles Jury to make a successful UFC debut at featherweight against a very talented opponent, Oliveira.
Yeah, as long as he's doing everything the right way, this could be a breakout performance for Miles Jury in the featherweight division. But Charles Oliveira is definitely not somebody you can sleep on. I mean, yeah, he's had some ugly performances in his career, especially that last fight against Max Holloway. But Oliveira has been in there against some great fighters and had some great performances. I mean, he had a gutsy showing against Frankie Edgar in Edgar's first fight after losing his title shot to Aldo. He had a very impressive performance in his victory over Jeremy Stephens, where he actually was holding his own on the feet against Stevens and then was getting takedowns and doing his thing on the ground. So he is always a guy that you can't sleep on. He's always going to be dangerous with his submissions. And his stand-up is not that bad. It's not as good as Miles Jury's, in my opinion, but it's still something that he can be competitive against most guys in the featherweight division. Now, Jury does have some power. He usually will sit back and jab a little bit. He doesn't sit down on his punches as much, but when he does commit to his strikes, he is dangerous, and I think that his stand-up advantage should be very big here against Oliveira. He should have a lot of confidence in there. And in terms of the ground game, Jury probably does have the better wrestling, but Oliveira, I mean, he is so good on the canvas. I mean, the guy submitted Hatohiyoki. I mean, just so dangerous with his submission skills. So Jury has to be careful. I mean, you saw he was a little overconfident in his ground game in his last fight at lightweight when he went in for takedowns against Cowboy Cerrone and ended up getting caught in omoplata and then getting put in some really bad positions on the ground. Now, he was able to avoid getting submitted, but I mean, he did get schooled a little bit there. So I think what Jury wants to do here is keep this fight standing for the most part and try to knock Oliveira out or just outpoint him. I mean, Miles Jury is not afraid to outpoint somebody. He's done that before in fights. Sometimes he can be a little boring at times, and he might want to just play it safe here and just try to walk away with a decision. But the possibility for a TKO should be there. Charles Oliveira is definitely knockoutable. And I think Jury can get that, so I think he has more ways to win, so I'm going to side with Jury. Now, kicking off the UFC on Fox 17 main card, we have a women's strawweight contest featuring Randa Markos, who is 5-3, taking on UFC newcomer Carolina Kowalkiewicz, who is 7-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I've been Markos -175, the comeback on Kowalkiewicz at +135. Right now, Markos is -175, Kowalkiewicz is +155. So line margins tighten up a little bit, not a ton of action coming in on this fight either. It should be a fairly competitive fight. We should see a really good fight, honestly, between both ladies. Starting off with Kowalkiewicz first, she's pretty good. I mean, she's undefeated fighter, of course. She's had a couple close decision calls recently in her last two outings against quality competition, though, as well. So glad to see her making her UFC debut here, but she has a very tough opponent in Markos. But getting into Kowalkiewicz a little bit more, she's a well-rounded fighter, likes to push forward on the feet, has speed, utilizes her jab ball, throws combos. I mean, she's just on you. She's the kind of girl that her striking is her best attribute for sure, and she pushes such a high pace that she's just all over you. And again, it's not like single shots either. She throws combos fairly well. She has a little bit of power to go along with it. Nothing too overboard, though, so it's not like she has a ton of knockout power, but she's definitely game, and she can push a high pace the entire time. I did notice that she tends to slow down as the fight goes a little bit, but even in round three, even tired, she still is in your face, and she's pushing forward. So she's a type of fighter that is very difficult to adjust to because, I mean, you can't take breaks fighting a lady like this at all. She's going to be on it. Now, as far as ground game goes, she has pretty decent takedown defense, but she can get put on her back. The thing on the ground is she's not bad. I mean, it's hard to submit her. She has good sub defense. She has ability to get back up and scramble off of a bad situation and get back to her feet as well. So even though she doesn't have a really outstanding offensive submission game, she definitely has a serviceable game, especially for her skill set and her ability to keep things on the feet and then utilizing her striking advantage over most. For Marcos, of course, it's almost the opposite because she's more known as being a ground fighter, although she's making some huge strides in her boxing and her striking game as well because, I mean, she definitely has some speed, has a little bit of power to go along with it. Now she's developing. She's getting a little bit more confidence. But what truly is her best attribute is getting some takedowns and then just smothering opponents on the ground. She has a beautiful head and arm throw that she utilizes quite often in her fights. Once on top, I mean, she has pretty good ground and pound. She looks for the submissions as well. And she's going to have to do a lot of this against Kovačević to have success in this spot because I think this has a close decision type of fight written all over it. Marcos should have the advantage because I think she is the better grappler here. She does have the better takedown game and she is going to get the fight to the floor throughout. On the feet, Marcos, I think, is going to be successful as well. It'll be a back-and-forth type of fight because her stand-up game is catching up to her ground game. But as the fight goes, my only question with Marcos is she does slow down every fight. In round two and round three, you do see not the same fighter as you see in round one with Marcos. So if she tends to slow down here and is not able to get the fight to the floor with the pace Kovačević pushes, it's going to be a difficult time for her to steal a decision here as well. So if it hits the scorecards, this is a very competitive split decision type of fight, in my opinion. But you do have to give most of the advantages to Marcos here in this spot. I think that, again, she is making improvements. I mean, she's top of the food chain when it comes to the 115-pound division, no doubt about that either. So this is an important win for her resume, even though it is against a debuting UFC fighter. And Marcos is training at TriStar now, which is huge for her, I think. We're going to see a better version than we've had thus far. So if she keeps on making improvements, I mean, sky's the limit really for Marcos. So she could definitely contend for a title. And it starts here really with a solid win over Kovačević. And I think she could probably get the job done. So as long as Marcos doesn't basically give up the fight with her cardio, just kind of slowing down enough to let Kovačević back in, I think she wins this fight. I mean, she is the better, more talented overall fighter, and I think that TriStar experience and the training under their umbrella should actually seriously have a positive impact on this fight. So I'm going to lean Marcos here to win this fight.
Kovačević is a lot of fun to watch fight. She is a high-pace, high-energy striker. She throws a lot of combinations. Her kicking game's on point. My big issue with her is there's really no punching power whatsoever behind her strikes. Either she's not sitting down on her strikes or she's just lacks any power really to finish a fight in, at least in terms of the striking game. So Marcos doesn't have as much to fear in the stand-up, but hopefully she does not just completely ignore Kovalkovich's stand-up game and try to stand and bang with her, because I think that would be definitely a mistake. Kovalkovich throws with so much volume and mixes things up so well that I think she could definitely outpoint Marcos over three rounds if she decides to play that game. Now, looking at Kovalkovich's fights, one thing that in her most competitive fight against Mizuki Inoue, Kovalkovich got taken down in that second round. She had trouble getting back to her feet. She gave up a bad position. So, and that was against somebody who I feel is a worse grappler than Marcos. So while Kovalkovich has a decent grappling game in her own right, if Marcos is able to get on top, is able to start working her over with some ground and pound, get that dominant position, or just get a superior position, she should be able to keep it too, because Marcos is going to be very slightly stronger, a little bit bigger than Kovalkovich. So I do think that those very, very teeny tiny advantages will actually matter, especially if Marcos can close that distance, can drag this fight to the canvas. So, I mean, really, this fight is going to hinge on whether or not Marcos can score takedowns and then make Volkovich pay on the canvas. She was able to do that against Tisha Torres, though granted that was on The Ultimate Fighter, but that was a huge, huge win for her. And I think if she follows a similar game plan, then I can see her definitely winning. I mean, Volkovich actually has a similar style to Torres, just not quite as fluid or quick and dynamic on the feet. Volkovich is biting off a little bit more than she can chew in this UFC debut, and it's not a very good matchup for her. So we'll see how it plays out, but I think this is Randa Markos' fight to lose, so I'm going to pick her. Now moving up to the lightweight division, we have Michael Johnson, who is 17-9, taking on Nate Diaz, who is 18-10. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Johnson, minus 305, the comeback on Diaz, plus 225. Right now, Johnson is actually minus 470. The comeback on Diaz is plus 375. My, how times have changed. Man, I'll tell you what, and it's really not a surprise because what you have here is two people going in two opposite directions. I mean, Diaz has had his issues. I mean, it seems like he's honestly hit a spot in his career outside of the personal issues and the beef and, you know, the family dispute with the UFC and all that stuff, all the drama that's, you know, comes into the business aspect of it. He's actually seems like, for some reason, I mean, he's coming off 3 out of 4 losses into this fight, and he hasn't fought since December of last year either. It just seems like he's almost hit a bit of a decline spot. And for 30 years old, that's a little bit of a head scratcher there. But at the same time, in fight years, he's had some wars. He's faced good competition. So not looking the greatest right now in his career. And it's unfortunate because before that, before his little skid here, he had a quality win over Cerrone. He had a quality win. I mean, just smoked Jim Miller as well. That's not easy to do. Neither one of those. So Diaz was looking great, like a legit contender. And of course, I mean, his skill set on the ground, he's hard to deal with. I mean, he's got the length. He's got the technique. He's got the skill. He can beat you on the floor for sure by submission. On the feet, I mean, he's got the aggressiveness. He's got the length. He knows how to use that as well. There's a lot of good things about Diaz's boxing to go along with it. Now, defensively is a big concern for Diaz, and he's facing one of the most explosive dynamic strikers in the lightweight division right now in Michael Johnson. Now, you could say the total opposite stuff about Michael Johnson. I think he's never been better. I know he's coming off that very close decision loss to Darius, but before that, he went on a skid, and that Darius fight is nothing to frown upon either, because that was a very competitive fight. And Darius is one of the best lightweights out there right now. Stylistically, it was a tough matchup for Johnson as well. And he actually did a lot better, or a lot of people were expecting Johnson to win as well. So I'm not saying he did a lot better than most think, but I'm saying that not getting submitted, not really getting beat by Darius in the way that he could have. It could have been a lot worse, put it that way. That's what I'm trying to spit out. So Johnson, even despite that loss, I think he's looked phenomenal because he's got great takedown defense. He's got tremendous boxing ability. He's got punching power that can knock most out in the lightweight division. He's got confidence. His cardio is getting better. So these guys are trending in two complete opposite directions, where Johnson continues to improve his game and is climbing towards that title shot. And Diaz is not fighting very consistently. He's looked sluggish. He's looked a little bit awful recently, and his striking defense is a big question mark, especially his chin. He's been getting rocked. I mean, it's just not a good look for Diaz right now. And this matchup for him is definitely a tough one because you're facing a guy again on the upward, you know, trend, which has looked phenomenal. So what this comes down to is the fight should stay upright. Michael Johnson has the wrestling to keep it upright. I don't think he's going to go for many takedowns in this fight. I mean, his fight IQ, especially training with the Black Zillions and game planning and all that, is pretty legit. He's not going to come in here looking to take Diaz down and get submitted on the ground. He's not going to try to do that, obviously. He's going to try to stand and bang, and he's going to try to knock Diaz out, which is very possible. That's why people are coming in betting Johnson in this spot. I realize that. It is a dangerous fight, although I said all that stuff, because Nate Diaz, I mean, if the Nate Diaz that showed up against Cerrone shows up in this fight, he can obviously win the fight, and he could even, you know, win on the feet, as proven in that fight. If the Nate Diaz that showed up the rest of the way, though, recently, he's not going to win this fight. It's going to be an ugly performance by him, and he's probably going to get knocked out against Michael Johnson. So I'm not counting Diaz completely out of it. But from what we've seen recently, I understand, like, in the movement, the action, where the current line is at. I mean, Michael Johnson is the fighter to beat right now, and Nate Diaz is really kind of playing catch up, and he's going to be lucky that he maintains on the roster here with a loss, especially if it's a devastating loss. So he's fighting for his roster spot. I'm not even sure if Diaz cares too much at this point. Michael Johnson definitely cares. I mean, it matters for him because he wants to get a potential title shot. So it's pretty clear cut here. I am going to pick Michael Johnson to win. I think he can keep the fight upright. If he doesn't knock Diaz out, then he should outpoint him on the feet as well. He just has to be careful because Diaz taking his back is not a good thing for Johnson. Diaz getting the fight to the floor at all and any type of scramble is not good for Johnson either. And then again, Diaz, you can't underestimate his boxing at times either offensively, although he does have enough holes in his game that Johnson should exploit him on the feet. So it is what it is. I hope we see a really competitive fight because I want to see Diaz come back and I want to see him perform like a top contender in the lightweight division. I just don't think he has it left or has it in him anymore. So it's pretty clear cut here. Michael Johnson should get the W.
Well, I've got two words for you in regards to Johnson avoiding submissions, and that's Beneil Dariush. In my opinion, Beneil Dariush is the better ground fighter than Nate Diaz. He had better wrestling than Nate Diaz. He can drag a fight to the canvas much better than Nate Diaz, and Michael Johnson stuffed every single one of his takedowns in his last fight, and Michael Johnson should have won that fight. Michael Johnson was the better striker. He prevented every takedown attempt, and he connected better. I mean, it was one of the worst decisions of the year, and yeah, we did a little bit benefit from that, but still, Michael Johnson deserves to be on a winning streak, deserves to be in top contention right now for the UFC lightweight title. And I think, honestly, it feels like the UFC is giving him a bit of a gift almost in giving him, at least at this point, a slightly worse version of Beneil Dariush, where Nate Diaz, who has a little bit worse wrestling, about the same, although maybe a little bit worse jiu-jitsu, but yeah, a little bit better striker. But, I mean, Michael Johnson went toe-to-toe with Edson Barboza and came out on the other side, and he did it by going after him on the feet. So I have to think that if Johnson is able to employ a similar style, then he can get things going here against Diaz. Now, I definitely do think that Diaz cares. I mean, I've seen some training photos. It looks like he is in tremendous shape heading into this fight. So I'm sure he's motivated to go out there and get back on track and take advantage of this opportunity, because this is also a huge opportunity for Nate Diaz. I mean, he is right on the fringes of the top 15 after fighting for a title just a couple fights ago. So, I mean, he really needs to get this win to get back on track. And with Johnson, I mean, he didn't lose any ground in the rankings with his loss to Dariush, because it really wasn't considered a loss by hardly anybody in the media. And this is a type of fight that can cement himself as one of the top contenders in the lightweight division. Johnson has terrific boxing. He's athletic. He has a good grappling background. He actually was primarily a wrestler, and he's just been slowly developing and adding to this striking game. And he has become extremely seasoned and dangerous. And I think that this is a great opportunity for him to go out there and exploit a couple things that Nate Diaz does. Primarily, Diaz will work that high volume game just like his older brother Nick, except he does not have a great chin. I mean, you've seen it. He's been dropped a ton of times in his UFC career, and then it finally caught up to him against Josh Thompson when he ate a huge head kick and then it ended up getting finished. Now, I'm not sure Johnson's going to kick his head off, but I think Johnson could drop him with punches and put him away. He's just got to be careful. Even if he hurts Diaz, he is going to be like a wounded animal, you know, and you got to be careful, and especially if he's following Diaz to the ground to try to put him away. So I'm favoring Michael Johnson, but Nate Diaz is definitely going to be dangerous. Johnson doesn't have a great chin either, so Diaz could clip him coming in if he's too reckless. Or Diaz, again, Johnson does have a history of poor submission defense. If somehow Diaz is able to get a hold of him, Johnson could get himself in trouble there as well. But I do favor Michael Johnson to keep this fight on the feet and then either outpoint or potentially knock out Nate Diaz. So my pick is Michael Johnson. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we have a heavyweight contest between former champion Junior Dos Santos, who is 17-3, taking on Alistair Overeem, who is 39-14 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I opened JDS minus 265, the comeback, and Overeem plus 185. Right now it's Junior Dos Santos minus 360. Overeem is plus 300. So more action coming in on Dos Santos. If you're looking at the fight, how it should go and how it should be, I mean, Junior Dos Santos has proven time and time again, outside of Cain Velasquez, he is the best heavyweight in the planet. Now, of course, Fabricio Werdum has something to say about that by recently defeating the man himself, Cain Velasquez. And of course, that rematch is going to play out. But so whatever it's worth, JDS is right there, top two or three. You got to give Werdum that respect. So I take that back a little bit right now, since times have changed a little bit recently. And JDS is still top three, though. So outside of the champion and the former champion, I mean, it's Junior Dos Santos's division. I mean, nobody has had success. Stipe Miocic was the closest one to that recently. He gave JDS all he could handle. I guess, you know, but Stipe is another quality heavyweight. So this fight, looking at things, I'm not surprised that the public is coming in on Junior Dos Santos, especially with Overeem's cardio issues. His performances are kind of hit and miss at times as well. He has all the talent in the world, Overeem does, to get this fight, really to finish a fight and to get the W here. And of course, he can actually, I mean, he's got enough talent. I mean, former Strikeforce champion, he has enough talent to actually wear the heavyweight crown in the UFC as well. I'm just not sure we're ever going to see that, because he does have some issues. And part of those issues, cardio and chin, which are two huge things against a guy like Junior Dos Santos. Because we all know Dos Santos, JDS hasn't looked on point or as good as we've seen him recently. I mean, it looks like maybe he's coming off a bit of a decline as well. I mean, those fights with Cain Velasquez had to take a lot out of Junior Dos Santos. So this fight is definitely closer now than it once was, even with Overeem's cardio and chin issues, because Junior Dos Santos takes a lot of punishment along the way, and Overeem can definitely dish it out. That's one thing he's great at. I mean, his kickboxing skill, his striking skill overall. I mean, this guy's a former K1 champion, for crying out loud, a tournament champion, which says a lot for MMA guys crossing over to a sport like that and winning the title. I mean, that's phenomenal. So Overeem is definitely a world-class striker on the feet. It's just his cardio and chin issues let him down, and he's able to get knocked out, especially as the fight goes on. And against Junior Dos Santos, you can't afford to do that. I mean, he's got obviously enough knockout power to do that to Overeem, and he's got enough fight IQ and cardio and conditioning that he should outpoint Overeem along the way as well. But this is a dangerous fight, especially with JDS taking as much punishment as he has recently, like I said, and with Overeem's offensive skill set. So if Overeem does not get caught, does not get knocked out, this is going to be an interesting fight, no doubt about that. Overeem should have the wrestling advantage over Junior Dos Santos in this spot, but let's face it, I mean, JDS's takedown defense is outstanding, and once you do get Junior Dos Santos down, it's easier said than done to keep him down. I mean, he's proven that time and time again as well. So even though Overeem does have a wrestling advantage, he could go to it if things aren't looking that great for him on the feet. It's still going to be hard to basically control Junior Dos Santos on the ground. Maybe a little bit of cage fighting and control against the cage might work for Overeem. So really it all depends on what kind of game plan he comes in with and if he could stick to it without really wearing himself down too fast. And it also depends on what JDS shows up in this fight as well. So I think it is a lot more intriguing than the current line indicates. Honestly, a minus 360 might be a tad high, but all that being said, you still got to go with the man. And Junior Dos Santos, until he does show us that, man, oh, he's definitely not the same fighter he was, by getting picked off like in a fight like this, a situation like this, you got to go with him. So I do think that Junior Dos Santos is going to beat Overeem. He's more dependable. His chin is great. He's been rocked. Of course, he's been knocked out, but he could take the punishment, man. I mean, he could definitely take it. Even if, and he has the heart that he can go even through damage, he could finish a fight and just keep trying to win. He's got that kind of will to win that you'd love to see. I mean, champion material. Junior Dos Santos is a former UFC heavyweight champion for a reason. I mean, just a class act all around. So I'm hoping he shows up and he looks back up to par and he puts on a great performance here and we see a pretty competitive fight, but we'll see how it goes here. But I do lean Junior Dos Santos to get the W over him. I think he can knock him out. I think he can decision him as well. So it's his fight to win or lose. But at the current price, be careful out there if you're going to lay that kind of juice on JDS at this point.
Oh, this is a tremendous matchup. It's one that we've been waiting to see for a really, really long time, dating back to UFC, I believe, 146, the all-heavyweight card, when Overeem was supposed to face then-champion Dos Santos for the title. But now it's finally happening a few years later. Junior Dos Santos is one of the greatest UFC heavyweights ever. I mean, he's been out there and not just defeated most of the best heavyweights on the roster, but smashed most of them. And Overeem, he's one of the more interesting heavyweights of all time and as well. And that's not just UFC, but everywhere. And I really
have been waiting for this matchup for a really long time. Overeem, you know, former K1 kickboxing world champion. Honestly, Overeem might be a little more well-rounded than Dos Santos, if you really believe it. He's a guy that will look to get fights to the floor at times. He has an underrated grappling game and submissions. He is extremely dangerous in the clinch with his knees and elbows. And then from distance, of course, he's got the elite kickboxing background. And Dos Santos, he's definitely more of a tremendous athlete with elite boxing that will just look to, land those crisp hooks and then just put his opponents away. Dos Santos also can throw the occasional kick, as you saw by his knockout of Mark Hunt as well. So Dos Santos is dangerous in every facet of the striking realm, although you really won't see a whole lot of other areas. Now, if I'm Alistair Overeem, I'm trying to get this fight to the clinch as quick as possible, similar to Cain Velasquez, who just pushed a pace on Dos Santos that just kind of broke him in their two title fights. And if Overeem can get him into the clinch and shove him into the fence and start working over knees and elbows, we could potentially see a repeat. Dos Santos really has never had a great answer for that situation in his career. So that's definitely something that Overeem should be looking for. Now, obviously, Overeem is always going to be dangerous from distance as well, but when you get to that area, Dos Santos has a much better chin, and if they're trading punch for punch, especially punches to the head, then Overeem could get himself in some serious trouble. Now, Overeem has been doing a lot of his training with Greg Jackson, so I'm expecting a brilliant game plan where they try to do whatever it takes to take away Dos Santos' strengths. And I'm sure that it involves potential takedown attempts and clinches while mixing in the occasional work on in pure stand-up. So if Overeem is able to utilize his full, well-rounded game, he's actually got a shot here. But I do think it's going to be difficult. The only way that I don't see Dos Santos walking away with a victory here is if he really has fallen off to the point where he's just not quite able to get back to that same level. And if that's the case, then he is beatable. And maybe people are going a little crazy with this line. But I do favor Dos Santos to connect and get the knockout at some point in this fight. I mean, three rounds is a long time for Alistair Overeem to avoid eating a big shot from Dos Santos. And I think at some point, JDS hits him, cleans his clock, and puts him out. So my pick is Junior Dos Santos. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have UFC lightweight title fight between champion Rafael Dos Anjos, who is 24-7, taking on Donald Cowboy Cerrone, who is 28-6 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open RDA -285, the comeback on Cerrone +205. So Dos Anjos is the favorite, deservingly so as well. I mean, he's the current champion, and man, what a performance he put on last time against Anthony Pettis. A lot of us are still in shock how dominant he was, and just being able to win all five rounds. Amazing. And especially considering in the past, I mean, Dos Anjos has had some cardio issues, in my opinion, that have cost him some potential wins in the past, has cost him a lot in his career, and cost him some trust factor, in my opinion, as well. So a lot of things surprising in that fight with Pettis. But that being said, look at the skill set. Dos Anjos is a stud on the feet, very technical, has power, has great wrestling, underrated wrestling, honestly. And then on the ground, he can submit you as well. He's got great jiu-jitsu. So the guy is a complete MMA fighter that's improved. He's been in the UFC for a long time now. He climbed his way up to that title shot, and he deserves to be where he's at. I have a lot of respect for Dos Anjos. He's a tough, tough out for most people, honestly. I think he's the most complete champion that we've seen in a long time, and he's going to be tough to beat. Now, of course, Habib could say something about that if he ever gets back to, you know, into the mix of things, and if he could stay away from being injured, because he had a very dominant performance against the current lightweight champion. We know that. Outside of that, though, I mean, we've seen RDA and Cerrone have a battle not long ago, and it was a classic battle. I mean, Cerrone got beat by Dos Anjos, and I think it was a right call, right decision. Dos Anjos was able to have some success on the feet. He was able to utilize his wrestling in that fight as well, and he was able to grind Cerrone out and beat him by the clear decision. Now, round three in that fight did get interesting because Dos Anjos did tend to slow down a little bit, and Cerrone clearly won that round, in my opinion. So that's what makes life a little bit interesting here. This is a title fight. It goes five rounds. If the RDA that shows up against Pettis shows up in this fight, he should be able to go five rounds, no problem. And it's going to be a tough, tough fight for Cerrone. But Cerrone's, man, I mean, here's a challenger that, what else can you say? The guy has looked phenomenal in a lot of ways as well. He's fought in great competition. He's went on this amazing run, and he's done it before as well. It's just, he deserves to be in the spot that he's at. He's got outstanding striking, really good fight IQ. Again, he can beat you on the ground by submission. He's got good wrestling to go along with it. So a lot of the same things I just said about Dos Anjos, I can say about Cerrone. I just think Dos Anjos is just a step above Cerrone at this point. Now, as far as danger on the feet goes, obviously Cerrone is the more dangerous, capable fighter of getting the knockout. So I think that's his best path to victory is actually landing some of the harder shots as the fight goes on, trying to do some damage and getting Dos Anjos out of there on the feet. He's going to have to avoid the takedown game, which his takedown defense is pretty solid in most cases. So it's not going to be easy for Dos Anjos to get him to the ground, control him time and time again. So he's going to have his opportunities. He's going to have a shot. Now, is Cerrone going to submit Dos Anjos? No, I doubt that. I think there's a better chance that Dos Anjos submits Cerrone. Not that that's going to happen either. I don't think that's the way it goes. I think this fight's going to be probably a very competitive decision. If there's a finish, it could realistically go either way, but I mean, I slightly lean a little bit more towards Cerrone if it's inside, because I think he could along the way maybe land and put RDA out. But outside of that, I mean, it's Dos Anjos' fight to win or lose. I think on the scorecards, he can outpoint Cerrone again, especially if he maintains that cardio and maintains the shape that he was. I mean, he was even hurt in that Pettis fight. I mean, just like I said, a head scratcher completely that he was able to dominate Pettis like he did. So this is his fight to win or lose. It's hard to pick against Dos Anjos because outside of Khabib, again, it's outside of somebody that control him and grind him out, I think he's going to be a tough out for most people in the division because he's really improved his game through the years, and including a challenge worthy, a guy like Cerrone that's definitely in the right spot and a hard out for most people that's on an incredible win streak. I still think RDA is better than Cerrone at this point too. So it's his fight to win or lose. I'm going to go with the current champion to pull off the victory here. My pick is Dos Anjos to win the fight.
Now, if this fight had taken place four or five rounds immediately after Dos Anjos defeated Donald Cerrone, like maybe in an immediate rematch, I actually would have favored Cerrone because Dos Anjos came out like the hounds of hell, got those first two rounds, and then he ran out of steam, slowed down bad in the third round, and Cerrone was able to win that final frame. And you know, it was obvious that Dos Anjos did not have the conditioning, and he's shown historically that he didn't have the conditioning to win a five-round fight. And then, for some reason, I mean, out of nowhere, he goes out there and takes it to Anthony Pettis for five straight rounds and dominates the champ in a lightweight title fight as an underdog. And all his conditioning issues he's shown historically completely disappeared. They evaporated. It made no sense. And he pushed a higher pace in that fight for all five rounds as he's ever pushed in a fight. So I don't know where this cardio came from. I don't know if it's going to keep going, but if it is, then you have to favor Dos Anjos to retain this title. I mean, Dos Anjos dropped Cerrone the last time they fought in the first round. He has good power in both hands, especially that left hook. He's a competent wrestler. He is an elite ground fighter. So he takes away a lot of Cerrone's advantages. Plus, being a southpaw, that's an advantage in its own right, especially at the very high levels. You're seeing more and more now. A lot of the best fighters on the UFC roster, a lot of the champions are fighters that fight in the southpaw stance. You got Dos Anjos, you got Luke Rockhold just became crowned the champ. You got Holly Holm. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. I mean, historically even, with Machida and all those guys. So, I really do think that it's going to be very difficult for Cerrone to properly prepare for this, even though they already fought. And even with Greg Jackson in his corner, Dos Anjos does have a lot of advantages, and he is a very, very talented fighter, and he's getting some incredible instruction at King's MMA by Rafael Cordeiro. I mean, he has evolved his game so much. I mean, he's always kind of had that ability to be a contender, but I mean, he just has taken it to that next level. And I don't know. I mean, Cerrone's been good, and he definitely 100% deserves this opportunity to compete for a title, but I just don't see this fight going much differently than the first one, except for the fact that Dos Anjos somehow is not going to run out of steam this time around. So I think that it could be even worse for Cerrone unless Cerrone is able to catch Dos Anjos coming in. I mean, Cerrone is, at least in my opinion, the better, more technical kickboxer. But with Dos Anjos being that southpaw, he can definitely throw you for a loop because it's just so difficult to prepare for. And Dos Anjos is training and fighting against righties his entire career, and Cerrone, he's not. He's not preparing for southpaws, so there's only so much extra work you can do. Now, in terms of submissions and wrestling and all that stuff for Cerrone, as good as his submission game is, it's not quite on that level of Dos Anjos. Now, we haven't really seen Dos Anjos dominate someone in terms of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in a long time, but I mean, he clearly still has that ability. And I don't see Cerrone getting anything going in the submission department. I think Dos Anjos is the slightly better wrestler, so if he gets takedowns, he's not going to be too concerned about that. I don't see Cerrone getting a lot of rubber guard game or omoplatas or any of that stuff going like he did in the Miles Jury fight. And really, on the feet, Dos Anjos' power is definitely scary. So I favor Dos Anjos, and the only thing that I really think Cerrone has a good shot with is if he can really start to crack some heavy kicks, and if he can potentially clip Dos Anjos on the way in. But Dos Anjos was able to walk right through Anthony Pettis, take a few of his best shots, and then just punish him. So I'm favoring Dos Anjos to retain that title and pick up the win in the rematch against Cerrone. So my pick is Rafael Dos Anjos. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC on Fox 17. Part 2 of the Premium Oddscast featuring our premium bets will be out this Friday following the weigh-ins, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. Also, if you'd like to become a premium member, just go to MMAOddsbreaker.com and you can sign up in the top right corner of our homepage for either Nick's or Mike James's premium bets. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.